Isla Pixel, Mexico, 1929. In the beginning were the howlers. They always commenced their bellowing in the first hour of dawn, just as the hem of the sky began to whiten. It would start with just one, his fourth rhythmic groaning, like a saw blade. That aroused others near him, nudging them to bawl along with his monstrous tune. Soon the maroon-throated howls would echo back from other trees, further down the beach into the whole jungle filled with roaring trees. As it was in the beginning, so it is every morning of the world. The boy and his mother believed it was a saucer-eyed devils streaming in those trees, fighting over the territorial right to consume human flesh. The first year after moving to Mexico to stay at Enrique's house, they woke up terrified at every day's dawn to the howling. Sometimes she ran down the tiled hallway to her son's bedroom, appearing in the doorway with her hair loose, her feet like iced fish in the bed, pulling the crocheted bedspread tight as a web around the two of them, listening. It should have been like a storybook here. That is what she'd promised him back in the cold little bedroom in Virginia, North America. If they ran away to Mexico with Enrique, she could be the bride of a wealthy man, and her son would be the young squire in a hacienda surrounded by pineapple fields. The island would be encircled with a shiny band of sea like a wedding ring. And somewhere on the mainland was its gem, the oil fields where Enrique made his fortune. But the storybook was The Prisoner of Zenda. He was not a young squire, and his mother, after many months, was still no bride. Enrique was their captor, surveying their terror with a cool eye while eating his breakfast. "That howling is the Olaras," he would say, as he pulled the white napkin out of its silver ring into his silver-ringed fingers, placing it on his lap and slicing into his breakfast with a fork and knife. They howl at one another to settle out their territories before they begin a day hunting for food. "Their food might be us," mother and son agreed, when they huddled together inside the spiderweb of bedspread, listening to a rising tide of toothsome roars. "You'd better write all this in your notebook," she said. "The story of what happened to us in Mexico. So when nothing is left of us but bones, someone will know where we went." She said to start this way. "In the beginning were the Olaros, crying for our blood." Now, listeners, if you're wondering what that is all about, let me enlighten you. Every month from the beginning of 2026, I will have a little book corner where I will invite you to join me to discuss and to talk about my latest books or books I've read in my life that have influenced me, and to share with you those that I think that you might enjoy as well. That extract was taken from a book called The Lacuna by writer Barbara Kingsolver. It actually was published for the first time in 2009, but I only came across it recently, having just read The Demon Copperhead, which is a contemporary take on Dickens' David Copperfield. I found in her an extraordinary writer with great descriptive powers, an extraordinarily finely crafted expressions, and a compelling storyline. So when I found La Lacuna, I thought, let's have a look at this. At over 700 pages, or near enough 700, it's a compelling read, and it's an epic tale that sweeps from 1930s Mexico to the McCarthy witch hunter trials in America in the late 90s and 50s, where a number of predominant people were reckoned to be alleged communists and should then be witch hunted. And this story starts, as I said, in Mexico, and it is told largely through the diaries and notebooks of the young Harrison Shepherd, who has aspirations, as is told in the notebooks, to be a writer of novels set largely in Mexican history, the Aztecs and other known tribes. Together with his diaries and notebooks, there are also letters written by his loyal and long-term loyal secretary, Violet Brown, who pieces together all these scraps and notes that she finds as he's writing his novels. This takes place later when he moves back to the United States after a prolonged stay in Mexico, where he actually becomes the secretary and the cook for the renowned artist Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera, her husband. So he's kept, apart from cooking and writing the secretary notes for Diego, he's kept busy with other chores and other things around the house, and at one point meets Trotsky, who pays a visit. Lev Trotsky is actually escaping from persecution in Russia. So Shepherd inadvertently casts in his lot with art and revolution, and his aim for an invisible life is thwarted forever. It's an extraordinary book and very compelling, and it does take some concentration, so possibly not one to read late at night, as I usually do my reading. So that's one coming off the shelf for this month. But just before we go, let me read you another little extract which actually explains what a lacuna is. At the base of that cliff, this is where Harrison is swimming, something lay under the water that can't be seen from a boat. A dark something, or really a dark nothing. A great deep hole in the rock. It was a cave big enough to dive down and crawl into, or feel around the edges and go a little way inside. It was very deep, a water path tunnelling into the rock, like the path through the mangroves. 24th of November. Today the cave was gone. Saturday last it was there. Searching the whole rock face below the cliff did not turn it up. Then the tide came higher and waves crashed too hard to keep looking. How could a tunnel open in the rock, then close again? The tide must have been much higher today and put it too far below the surface to find. Leandro says the tides are complicated and the rocks on that side are dangerous to stay over here in the shallow reef. He wasn't pleased to hear about the cave. He already knew about it. It's called something already, La Lacuna, so not a true discovery. Laguna? The lagoon? No, Lacuna. He said it means a different thing from lagoon, not a cave exactly, but an opening like a mouth that swallows things. He opened his mouth to show me. It goes into the belly of the world, he says. Isla Pixol melts and flows like water. It wasn't God, it was volcanoes. Don Enrique has a book on them. It doesn't matter because either one of them can drown a boy who thinks he knows more than God because he reads books. Leandro was very angry. He said, stay away from that place or God will show you who made those holes. So join me again next month when I'll be talking about books that influenced me in my childhood. Have a good read.